Steve, I remember to hit the record button this time. Are you proud of me?
Wonderful. It's great.
It's great. How are you?
Wonderful. It's a podcast night.
I'm going to now say the joke that I said before when we weren't recording, which is he's very regular. You could set your watch to it. Good. Great. I'm glad you're here. We've got a great show for you, as always. We are joined by Ryan Hawkinsmith, who is a Penn State alum / ESPN writer, for a great conversation, kind of about his life journey, his career journey, some of the challenges he's overcome. He has a great perspective on life. It's a longer interview, but I promise you, it's a very good interview. It's a very in-depth, it's a great interview. So take a listen to that. And then we've got a little bit of wrestling news to talk about because we've decidedly become a Penn State wrestling podcast by accident along the way. And then we've also got Old Guy Young Guy to talk about too. So go ahead and listen to Ryan and we'll... I forgot to say, this is the Stuff Summer Says podcast with...
Steve.
And also Ryan Hawkinsmith. So go ahead and listen to that. Our guest today is Ryan Hawkinsmith of ESPN. He has been at ESPN in varying roles, in which we'll get to here in a second, but varying roles, and primarily works as a staff writer now. Ryan, how are you?
I am fantastic. I'm even better now that I'm joining you guys.
Good, good. Okay. All right, Ryan. I'm going to ask this question in a very particular way, I think would be the best way to say this. This is kind of our usual go-to question, but I'm going to ask you very particularly because I think you'll know where we're going with this when I ask it. What is your career journey?
Oh my God. How long do you want to, how long is the answer supposed to be?
However long you want it to be.
Okay. I'm going to get very personal on you right up front. I spent my whole life as a kid, I wanted to be an athlete. And then at a certain point you realize like, oh my God, like I'm not good enough, you know? And then I was like, you know what? If I'm not going to be in the Super Bowl, I want to cover the Super Bowl. So I knew as like a 15 or 16 year old that I wanted to be a writer. And so I went to college for it. I had an unbelievable experience at Penn State. I got to do all sorts of things. And it just firmed up the idea that that's what I wanted to be when I grew up. And so I got out of college. I had a good college career. And I started writing for ESPN. And the first couple of years were pretty good. But in my personal life, which we'll probably get into, I had some health stuff and got wrapped up in opioids and alcohol. And by 2004 or five, I just was not capable of doing pretty much any job, let alone, you know, writing. And I switched jobs to an editor job, get more stability in my life. It was suggested to me, you know, it wasn't my choice, but it was the right thing. I deserved to be switching jobs and try something else. Like that was absolutely the right recipe. And I spent 3 years doing that. And, at my life, I was falling apart. I almost died every day, drug addiction and alcoholism. And 2008, I went to rehab. My life totally changed. I've been sober ever since. It's a day-to-day proposition, obviously, but I was working as an editor and I did that. I got pretty good as an editor at ESPN. And I did that for a long time until about 2019 or 20. And I started asking my bosses, I just had this part of me, you know, it's midlife crisis, probably. Steve's had about six midlife crises, probably. But nice. The general idea that hits all of us, men, women, everybody, is did I do what I wanted to do in my life? Like, did I? And there's a part of you that realizes or starts to believe that there's more doors closing than are opening. It's, you know, it probably is age 28 for some people, or 20, or 40, or 60, or whatever. For me, it was about 42, where I was just like, I'm never going to get a better chance than right now to say, can I try what my dream was? Can I give this another shot? And a lot of people, like I try to tell people, man, I eventually got that opportunity and I'm living it. I'm living it right now. And it's a pretty awesome thing to like, even if I fail right now as a writer, I'm on my first 3-year contract as a writer full time. I'm 2 years in. Even if it doesn't work out, I'll be so glad at age 80. That I tried, you know, that I at least went for it. And that's my journey. Like right now I'm doing a job that like, it's a great job, but it also fulfills a existential part of me that was like, this was my goal in life and I blew it. I blew it. That's it. No one, this isn't ESPN's fault that I ended up at a rehab place in 2008. It was my life choices and addiction and all that other stuff. And I got a chance to like go back and kind of right that wrong in my life. It's a beautiful thing. So that's my journey.
Okay. All right. So you got into it a little bit there. I had known that based on kind of hearing some stories that you've talked about and kind of presented about yourself. How did both, your experience, I think it was you said right around college, and then, kind of the following battle with opioids and alcoholism, how did that shape you into the writer you are today?
Well, I do think, I don't think like I'm a fantastic writer. I really don't. I really, it takes a lot of work for me to put together. My favorite stories took a lot of work. But I do think I'm a good reporter, and I do think I have good ideas. And I do think when I get into conversations with people, I've had some low lows in my life, and there's an understanding. I don't even know exactly like how to describe like what this skill is, but there's a lot of interviews where I'm talking to somebody about a thing that they're going through and it pings something in my brain where I'm like, yes, I've spent 6 months in a wheelchair. I know a really bad injury. I've done it. I know what the sadness that can happen. I know that it puts strains on personal relationships. You might love your mom and your dad and your brothers, but it puts a strain on your relationship with them. And so I will often have interviews where people cry a lot. Like I'm listening to audio sometimes in my interviews. I'm like, geez, again, you got this guy's mom crying again, like again with the sobbing. And it's, I think that there's a, like, I hope there's like an empathy that I developed, because of, the health stuff for sure, but the addiction stuff is really, it's rock bottom, man. It's rock bottom when you realize like, oh, I'm gonna either die or get sober. Those are the two choices. I've wrecked relationships. I've caused pain. I've felt pain. And so there's like something about that starting from scratch in life. Like when I talk to an athlete about their ACL or they're losing a relative or something like that, it's like, I don't know. I feel like I've been in the darkness a little bit, I can really talk to people about that. And, I wrote a story earlier. Boy, it was just in March about this wrestler at Nebraska who got a flesh-eating bacteria that like ate his leg away. And he was talking to me about like the uncertainty of like them putting you on a gurney and rushing you in. And with in sports, injury is like good luck finding a high-profile athlete who hasn't had like a pretty bad injury, like a rotator cuff or something. And there's a something about overcoming it that like I've done a little bit of that. And so I can talk to them about it on a very human level, And so I do think, like, if you ask me, you can hit a button and not be a drug addict and alcoholic. Would you hit the button? I mean, I probably would, but I would think about it long and hard because there's a wisdom that comes from painful things that you just can't read it in a book and be like, oh, now I understand what it means to be that level of rock bottom. And so I do think that that has helped me, be able to talk to people on like a very personal level, oftentimes.
I think that comes through in your writing, though. And I think that's the main thing that was sticking out to me, kind of reading a lot of your stuff, particularly this weekend. I felt like I was having a conversation with you, but your writing style isn't necessarily conversational. It's not formal, it's not informal, but it's kind of, I don't know what the exact word is, but I feel very relaxed. I wrote it as, well, I was thinking about the questions I wanted to ask. For some writers, there's a difference, or some writers will talk to you and some writers will talk with you. And I felt like you're very much talking with me or writing with me. How did you develop that style? And did that kind of come from that personal aspect of being able to have these tougher conversations?
Well, I'll tell you this, whenever kids ask me about it, I think that the thing that helped me the most in my life is just I read a lot and I didn't read tweets. Okay. Like it was you read books. And I do think just reading Sports Illustrated as a kid and Dean Koontz books. It just, I don't know, reading a lot, I think it makes for better writing eventually. And so I'll tell you the one thing, what you're describing is a skill that I notice in other writers that I try to do, but I do it from a different way. Like when you talk to a great long form writer, one of the things that's amazing is you can ask them almost anything about the subject and they'll know. And what that means is that they have the story in a headlock. It's not, they're not writing about it from distance. They're in there, you know, they're in there. And some writers, they write about that, and it's because they're just like beautiful writers and can really welcome you in. Like, this is what this guy or this woman is like, and they can just do that. I get there with some of my stories because I insist on, I talk to so many people for stories. I just want to know every angle. So I come at it from like an informational part. Like, I think that you can get, but I think that there's some great writers who aren't great writers. They're just amazing reporters, and they just get so much information. They just make it a, you could just, they could just send you a list. Here's things people told me. Or this is what happened on the first day, and this happened on day two, day three. And it's just a list of stuff, and it's a great story. You know, at the end of the day, a lot of stories are just, and then this happened, and then this happened, and it's all really good. And I think I'm a good reporter. I don't know about the writer part. Like, when you read like a Tom Junot at ESPN, or Tim Kuhn, or even, you know, Seth Wickersham, some of these writers that are so good, they're super smart people, and they just are beautiful writers in a way that I'm not quite there yet. But I do think that I am converse. I do think I'm conversational. I know some people think that's sort of like a negative term. I don't find it to be like, I want to be able to like talk to you about it, you know, like, the high art part of it, I'm not there yet. So I appreciate you saying that's like the ultimate compliment, is that what I think is just, what you're saying is like, I like writers who are just like very approachable in their writing. You know, it's not
That's
homework.
a perfect way to put it. I think that's what I get out of it is I feel like you're a friend telling me a story as opposed to and some of those names that you mentioned and some of your other colleagues, they are incredible writers. But I also think some of that's just maybe personal preference. But I think sometimes they almost feel too smart, if that makes sense, or too not polished, but too overthinking. You could tell that they're really thinking about the way this sentence is. I just feel like I'm re like I feel Sunday walk is what I kind of was like feeling like as I was reading you. So I wanted to call that out and highlight that. So
Well, hey, let me tell you this. So my daughter has an English class right now, and the teacher is a really good teacher, and he teaches hard stuff to them, and I love that. She's struggling with a Toni Morrison book that she just started. And I thought, I'm a dad of the year right here. I'm going to read the book with her, and we'll talk about it together, and that will help. Then I start reading Toni Morrison. I'm on page like three, and I'm like, this person is way too smart for me. And I'm like, I'm gonna find the Wikipedia page. I'm going to cheat to help out my kid. And I know exactly what you mean. And I don't object to that writing at all. Like, I read it and I admire it, but it's just like, wow, this is really hard to just get your arms around it sometimes, you know? And I actually don't mind that a lot of my writing, I don't think I do writing that is like, you have to read it three times to understand it, you know? It's just pretty straightforward. I like that. I don't know.
But it's enjoyable, right? I mean, you write good stuff, and I want to call a little bit of BS on, like, okay, I'm 2 years into this 3-year contract, and we'll see how it goes. Like, it's going all right, right? Like, I mean, I don't know the list of names, and I didn't fact check the names you just gave me about, and I don't have my best American sports writing in front of me, but it's upstairs in the library in the office. Like, not all those names are in that book this year, and yours is, and there was a second one that was almost right there, so it's going okay, right?
Yes, it is. I'm really proud of what we've done so far, and I think this year I published I think it's 10 stories so far, which for long form stories, that's like a pretty, that's too high of a pace probably. But I don't know, I like doing stories that are really what's the best way to put it? I don't mind some of my stories, they're just candy. Like, you know, they're just like, But people like candy. When you go to a movie, it's like you don't order the asparagus, right? Like you're like, give me the Sour Patch Kids. I like doing some Sour Patch Kids, you know? And so yeah, I do think a lot of them. I appreciate that. That's very nice of you, Steve. But I do I listen, it's going well, I think, by most metrics and everything. And then I just for my spirit as a human being, it just is like very I don't really care that that anybody else is like, wow, what a redemption story that this guy's for me, it just is fulfilling because it just proves like if I didn't get a new contract or whatever, I would just know that I went for it, you know? There's something about going for it, and even if you fall on your face, it is like you can just be proud of it, you know? And I shared this, Steve's heard this story 50 times, but one of the most impactful things, like maybe 3, 4 years ago, I read was it was this massive study done of people who are, I think they were over the age of 80, and they're like they were just asked about their lives. And the number one regret is that they always took the safest route, you know, whether professionally or they married the safest, you know, the like a wonderful person, but it was like the safe choice. And they net always wanted to live in Paris for a year, and they just I don't know if I have enough money, and they didn't go for it. That's what they said. They didn't say, well, I got that promotion that one time. That was great. You know, the stuff we actually chase on a daily basis. I got named in this list or whatever. It's like that they went for it. And so I don't know. We'll probably get into this at some point, but like part of my midlife crisis was I was like, you know what I should try? Stand-up comedy. That would be a great idea. And I actually think it's been very helpful to my writing, but it was also just helpful to me to know that there was this thing that I always wanted to try. And I mean, it's an idiotic hobby. Don't freaking do it ever. But I tried it. I did it. I still do it sometimes. And I'm glad I did. You know, I'm really proud. I'll be proud someday that I did.
I like that. I
You
like
got
that.
fertile territory with the daughters, man. You got all kinds of comedy
Oh
happening
my
every day
God.
that's just
Oh
waiting to
my
be
God.
talked about.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Fatherhood. Yeah. I got a little bit of everything. Like you got some addiction, you got some like medical stuff. I got a wealth of material.
I like that. I
How
respect that.
far out are you working on stories? Like you said, 10 years too many. So when will the next one come? But like what's typical pace? What would ideal pace be?
Oh man, that's a tough question because I'm thinking about like what I mean, the goal of my group is to take really big swings, you know, really big swings at things. And I think like my first year at ESPN, I probably wrote about like 25 things. And then last year I think it was probably 12. And a couple of the stories just they took a little bit longer. And so we have And then this year, I mean, it's only May 13th, and I've done 10, I've probably done every 2, 3 weeks. That's probably a little bit too much, but I really like a high pace. I've settled into this thing where I have to have three things going at all times, not four, not two. I like to have a story that I've in the final stages of writing and submitting and doing a second draft on. I like to be doing interviews for a second one while that's happening. And then I like to kind of be just on the treadmill at the gym or whatever, thinking about the third thing that got greenlit that I'm gathering phone numbers for. And like sometimes I like to just I'll be working on two other things and I'll be just thinking through the third thing. And it helps to I mean just thinking through like where do I want this thing to go? Where could it go? Where do I not want it to go? But I do like to have I know some writers like to have just total focus on one thing, and that can be beneficial for sure. If you're writing a 5 to 10,000 word story about somebody, you probably should just be thinking that thing through every day, you know? And I've been had a little bit faster of a pace recently, but I can't handle be working on a story and just like spending 3 days waiting for somebody to call you back. I can't do it. I think maybe I'll slow down over time, but part of this goes back to what I said earlier, which is like this isn't like a thing that I do for money right now. It's like that happens to be the case, but it's like I wanted this opportunity and they said go ahead and I haven't burned out on I just want to like I want to be aggressive, you know? I really like it, you know? So I think I probably should be like working on one story and filing it and then launching on a second one. It should be like something like that. But right now it's pretty, pretty aggressive.
I think one of the things you said to me is, or said that struck a chord with me was the candy thing. And I think a lot of your stories are different. They are very out of the box. You got the pizza throwing incident. You've got the cauliflower ear story recently. You've got then the Fall Guy story that just came out. How do you come up with those ideas, and what does the pitch process to your editors look like?
You know, a lot of people say, like, it's one of the number one questions in any writer gathering, even like not just of me. It's just like, where you write good stories, like, where do your ideas come from? And I really don't know. I honestly, a lot of them comes from whatever my algorithm figured out about me, because I get fed tweets. I mean, one of the sweet spots for me is that I will see a thing that goes viral on a Tuesday. And in the world that we live in now, like that 15 minutes of fame thing, I think it's more true now. There's like a lot of people that are celebrities for one day and then the whole world moves on. If you look at my catalog of stories, a lot of them are like, there's stories that they come out 4 months later and you go, oh yeah, I remember that pizza slice. You know, that's like the dumbest story ever. And also, like, it was so much fun. It was just so much fun. I talked to a person at MIT about the flight trajectory of a pizza slice. And it is a remarkable throw that this guy made. It doesn't make any sense. The woman that I spoke to from MIT, she was doing it in her office. She had a triangle shaped thing that she was trying to throw. And she was like, that's like a one in a million throw. Like, that guy nailed it. That is so funny and fun to me, you know? And so that idea, honestly, I saw, maybe I saw, I do this a lot. I will cut and paste the tweet and put it in a file and hang, just hit sit with it for a little bit. I think I saw the 14th anniversary of that. And then I thought, boy, for the 15th anniversary, perfect time. We got to do this. I did that last year with this guy who made a $1 million shot in 1993. It basically launched the era of sports contests. This thing went. He was on the Tonight Show. He was on Good Morning America. He was like a celebrity. Nobody had ever really like heard of this. Like, oh, you a guy won $1 million just getting pulled out of the crowd. Now every sporting event you go to, it's like $20,000 if he can shoot this puck through. And I thought I saw the 29th anniversary. It was April 15th or something. And I thought, boy, for the 30th anniversary, I got to find that guy. You know, so I will do that where I just stockpile stuff I see that comes in 1 year and out the other for most people. And then I think, like, I wonder if I could circle back. One of the things about viral fame in 2024 is the stuff that happens the month after is pretty interesting. People's lives change, or they change for a little bit and then they go away. You know, and it's like, oh, wish people were still calling me all the time. Thank you for calling, Ryan Hockenswith from ESPN. And you get a good story about what it's like to have fame just knock on the door and then leave, you know? And so that's where a lot of my ideas come from. But I do think the algorithm thing is sort of like not a joke. Like, my behavior online is like looking up weird stuff about sports, you know? Like, I'll give you another origin story of a thing that I did in early January, which was like, I heard two comedians on a podcast talking one night. It was like 11:30 at night. Two comedians talking on a podcast about how they were trying to figure out what's the most disgusting place on earth. And one guy was talking about, I forget what he said, but the first guy said, the second guy goes, I'll tell you the most disgusting place on earth. It's the gym on a cruise ship, because people have overeaten. There's people working out on the cruise. They're sweaty, they're gross, and that's the most disgusting place on earth. And I'm like watching it. I'm like kind of laughing. It's a funny bit that they're doing. And then I was like, cruise ship gyms. I was like, I wonder if the Titanic had a gym. And then I look it up and it's like one of the more influential gyms of all time. And then the story of the Titanic. I mean, a lot of my stories, I'll try to find a really good narrative. Like, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. But then I'll try to take a step back and be like, oh, this is sort of something that doesn't belong in an ESPN story almost. Like that story about the wrestler who had the flesh-eating bacteria that I wrote in March, I just spent a lot of time talking to bacteria experts. And so there's a section of that story that just you could give it to your uncle or your grandma or somebody who doesn't like sports. And they're like, oh, interesting. Bacteria is, you know, it's not as scary as you think, but it also will kill you if you get this and stay away from these places. And so the Titanic gym ended up being a story that we ran right after the new year that I don't know, it was kind of I just ended up getting all wrapped up in the Titanic too, which it's a fascinating story. And that, so you say, where do story ideas come from? That was like, that was my mind racing at midnight a little bit, you know? And I guess if I write a memoir, it'll be my mind racing at midnight, and not all of it will be good stuff. You know, like it's like, what doctor's office can I get pills from tomorrow? That was a chapter of that. That'll be a chapter. But then the Titanic gym will be another one.
I respect that. I respect that. Have you so the idea, the Titanic idea. I mean, that's ESPN material in that it is related to sports and a gym, right? But how do you go about then saying, "Hey, ESPN editor, I would like to write this. I would like to pursue this. Let me go chase this down and not just have it be an idea in my head."
Well, I'll tell you what, my editors, like, they're great editors in all of the typical editor ways, editing stories, greenlighting stories, and all of that stuff. The most beneficial part that I found in my editor structure, it's mostly through a guy named Justin Bay, who's an awesome editor. They talk me out of the bad ones. Like, they really are good at telling me which pitches not to swing at, because I send a lot of pitches. And they ain't all winners, that's for sure. And so they're so good at being like, there's not enough there. Because I know there's some ideas that I'll send to them and they're just like, it's okay, it's a single, but we don't like, don't try to hit singles. Like, let's go for the fences here. And so they'll talk me out of bad ideas. That's the number one thing that they do. And I routinely send two or three pitches in one email, and then I do one of them. And they always know that. You know, it's Justin and Scott Burton a lot of the time are my two editors, and they really smell the stinker, you know. They're like, don't do that one, and they'll tell me to do the other one, and their batting average is very, very high, and that helps my batting average, you know. And there's ones I have to talk them into. I had to talk them into the sports contest one because, you know, what a great editor has to do, whether you're at the New York Times or Sports Illustrated or ESPN, is also know the platform, right? Like, how many good are you, either one of you, big social media people?
I am, yeah.
You are. Okay. So, you know, you send tweets sometimes that was a better tweet than it got. That should have taken off. This should have had twice as many likes or whatever. A good editor knows you should have sent that at noon, not at midnight, you know, like, or you should have sent it at midnight, not at noon. And so my editors are really good at talking to me about, like, we don't think that that will see the light of day. Like, no one, like, that's too weird. You know, like, I'll tell you right now, if I had the Titanic gym story right now in the heat of NBA and NFL or NHL playoffs, it's probably not going anywhere near ESPN. So knowing where to put my story in the batting order, I'll keep the batting
It's playing
thing
out well.
up.
It's good.
Making
I'm just gonna keep
sense.
going.
I'm just gonna keep going, you know. Oh, I need a DH on that one. No, they're really good at, like, sort of saying, I don't think that's an ESPN story. That's a great. I have a lot of pitches that are like great Atlantic pitches or great New Yorker ideas, maybe. They don't fit at ESPN, and I appreciate that part of it. So part of the green light process is them saying back to me, that's a fun idea. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, and I don't know that it's the right story for ESPN. The Titanic one, honestly, it's on the border. You know, it's about fitness. It's about the evolution of weightlifting. And, you know, if you go on ESPN today, that's not a topic on First Take, right? So it's a little unorthodox. They have a long leash. They do give me a long leash. They do trust me quite a bit. And because I did spend 20 years as an editor, or 15 years or so as an editor, I also understand the way that the machine works at ESPN. So I can say to them, let's run this during the NBA draft process. And they'll often go, that's a good way to do it. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. So they're really good at that. That's part of the green light process too. And I work at a big company. I love ESPN. Like I'm a homer, man. Like I'm the wrong person to talk to. I love the company, and but it is a busy company. You go on our airwaves, we air a lot of different sports. I mean, we're the worldwide leader, okay? Like, I'm just gonna get some plugs in here. So it can be challenging. We show a lot of sports, we care about a lot of sports. We have like amazing fleet of journalists up and down the company that are covering great stuff. So there's certain days where I've looked at the ESPN calendar sometimes and been like, we published 25 good written stories yesterday, like 25 things. That's a lot, man. That's a lot. So that part of the green light process is actually important, and it's really important for some of the weirdo stuff that I throw at them.
You mentioned Justin and Scott and your ideas, those weirdo ideas. Are there people that say no to you? And is there some story out there lingering that you're trying to figure out the right approach to get someone to green light or say yes to?
I got a bunch of those for sure. They do. They say no. They really do. I'd say I'm about like 30% on the pitch to writing process, and man, they are right most of the time. Even when I yell at them, I don't really yell, but like I whine, I whine and groan, and they're I always I almost always feel like they end up being right, But yeah, they say no all the time. And a routine thing at ESPN is that, I want to do this Kevin Durant story, and you find out that there's three other people that have been pitching a Kevin Durant story from the all over the country, all over the world, sometimes. And so sometimes you kind of have to stand down on that. I would give you, there's a couple stories that come to mind that I really want to do, but like I don't think they're dead yet, so I'm like not going to say them. I'm sorry. They're just
That's fair. That's fair.
just jackpot story ideas. Obviously, I think everyone is just like gonna be my baby, but
Well, after the editors, are there sources that have said no? Like, has there been a pitch that has been lit by the green light by the editors, and then you get start writing? You're like, why would they say no to this? This is great. And they're like, yeah, we've had our 15 minutes, or no,
yes.
you're going to treat us weirdly, or whatever.
Yeah, it's you know what? I'm gonna say this one. I'm gonna say one. Okay. I hope I don't get in trouble for this. A couple years ago, Tom Brady announced he was playing for the Buccaneers, and he announced that he was doing a what are the cards that aren't cards? They're digital
The
cards.
NFTs.
NFTs. He announced an NFT, and he did a press conference announcing it. And it was typical athlete, this is going to be the coolest NFT ever, blah, 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 blah. Then there was this paragraph in there that he said at a press conference that was about how, as a kid, his parents, especially his mom, developed this incentive. I mean, it was like sort of in the allowance family of like, hey, if you get an A, I'll give you $5 kind of thing. I mean, it's bribery, right? Steve, we bribe our
Right.
kids, right? It's like positive bribery. She came up with a thing where she said, if you get good grades, I'll take you to the baseball card shop in town and you can buy a bunch of baseball cards, right? And that, he talked about being so driven in sports that it was like, what do I need to get to be able to on my grades to be able to be on the field? And she wanted to like balance that out a little bit. So she incentivized his academics. And he ended up getting really good grades so that he could go to this baseball card shop. So he says this at the press conference, and he mentions the name of the store. And I look up the store. It's still going 30, 40 years later. The number of baseball card shops, the number doesn't actually, you can't find the statistic anyway. The number of baseball card shops that were around in 1985 and exist in 2024, I don't know, it's a very low number because the industry has been up and down and up and down. And so this card shop still exists. I'm not going to say the name because when I called and talked to the owner, he was like, I have no interest in drumming up business. I have no interest in, I work for my customers here in this local area in California, and that's all I care about. I don't want to be famous. I don't want to participate in a story. And if he wasn't going to participate in the story, it's you can't tell the heart of this shop that has weathered the storms, And the guy who took it over was like, he was only like 40 years old. He worked there as a teenager. And then the guy who owned it sold it to a kid that worked there and cared about it the same way he did. And it was like kind of a beautiful story about Tom Brady's origins, but also this idea of pursuing your passion, even though it won't get you the stuff that society often rewards. Is like, you know, because in a similar situation, it's like I had a successful store and now my store, there's 40 of them and I make
Right.
this much money and I have a private jet. That's sort of what our, that's what capitalism sort of seizes upon as a value, as a metric. But this guy is successful because he has like 300 good customers and they all care about him. And so when that guy said he had no interest, and I tried a couple of times, he just was content with himself and his business. I just had to respect it. I thought about trying to write it anyway, and I was just like, no, I respect it. And so that one is one where my bosses were on board for it, and I thought it could be a good story. But now that Brady's not in the league even, I mean, it kind of doesn't work anymore.
Gotcha.
Was that
Yeah.
actually your question? Did you
It
ask
was
that?
my question. You gave me more than I thought I was going to get. It was
Okay,
wonderful.
okay.
Look at you. It was great.
Boy, what a rambling mess. I'm getting to
No,
be
you're
a
good.
I just.
You're good. You're good.
How do you remember the jokes for the stand-up set if you're rambling?
Well, I do have a notebook, and I there's something about you have to do it so many times. Like when you come up with a funny story or something, you know, my best material I've done on a stage in front of a crowd at least 20 times. And it makes it very hard to forget. I've done it in the shower another 100 times, you know, and it's like, you know, the premise and everything kind of the thing about like the thing that I makes me like not a very good comedian is that I still get up there and just talk. There's people that perform and they do funny faces, just like not there. Like if you think about 90% of the stuff that makes you really, really laugh, if you just read it on a piece of paper, you wouldn't laugh the same way. That person doing it, I mean, it's an act, right? It's an act. The way Seinfeld delivers sort of his the cynical, sort of uncaring deadpan is makes it so funny. If I said it, you wouldn't laugh the same way, you know? And so you say, how do you remember it? And it's like, I do remember it. So I do have a notebook there with the premise of it, but I've worked on it so many times. As long as I'm just prompted, I can do it.
All right, Ryan. I feel like we've covered all the bases. I think we've got three questions to kind of wrap up every interview with. I want to get your takes. They're all Penn State related because this is a Penn State podcast. So we got to tie it back, you know, make a full circle out of it, I guess would be the best way to say it. Your go-to creamery ice cream flavor.
I'm so boring. I don't know. I think I just say like vanilla.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing
Cookies and
wrong with that.
cream, maybe.
Okay. You like those creamy.
Can I give you the terrible hot take?
Uh-oh.
Creamery just okay to me. I'm sorry. I just like it's like a nice thing. It's big. It's a nice thing to take people to. If I came back there 20 times by myself, 0 for 20, I'm not going to the creamery.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I think you're
I'm
our
glad
first
I asked them about
guest.
the sponsorship last week.
Yeah.
That's going to go well. Way to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Sorry. Hey,
No.
I will tell you that it is very fun to take people to and just see them. It's perfectly fine. There's movies that I'm like, that's not a great movie, but I really like how much you like it.
The creamery is
That's good.
perfectly fine. I got
Yeah.
to look at your tagline. I can't wait. That's great. It's
Let's
like
just be
me,
friends.
like Susan with me. What do you think? I'm like, it's fine. Like, what's fine? You know, what do you want me to tell you?
Oh, is that's your opinion too?
Oh no, the
No.
creamery. Well, no, I like the chocolate milk. I thought you were going to go off the board for like one of the other ones in town, like Meyer Dairy or something like that. So no, oh, some people, not everybody's an ice cream person. So
Yeah.
that's okay. Yeah.
He's the first one that we've asked, I think, that just kind of balked at
But
the
maybe
creamery.
everybody else is just drinking the
Yeah,
Kool-Aid,
maybe.
literally, right? And that
Yeah.
doesn't even know they're allowed to have an opinion.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
Let me see if I can wreck any other potential ad.
Yeah. All right. What was the best dining commons on campus?
Oh God, I never lived on campus. I have no idea.
Okay.
Taco Bell and
Taco
something
Bell.
there anymore. Yeah, that was my
R.I.P.
favorite. Yeah, I
R.I.P.
never, you know, I would, so I did a branch campus. I did a
Okay.
branch campus experience where I did 2 years at Penn State Mount Alto. Shout out, Penn State Mount Alto. And it was a great experience. I wouldn't change anything about it. But there is something to be on at UP for 4 years, you know, and just really know it inside and out. And I always was the idiot that was like, wait, how does the bus work again? And that's the same way with the dining commons. I don't even remember the name of the place that I went to. So yeah, sorry. Not
Not see,
another hot
0 for
take.
2, 0 for
That's
2. Yeah,
okay. I
dining
feel like he'll
commons.
be. There's a lot of
They're
kids who
just
struggle with the
okay.
buses still,
Yeah,
so you're good.
no, I
They're just
struggle with
okay.
them.
Is it still called The Loop?
Yeah.
Yes. See, look at that.
Okay. Oh, okay. I know it
There you go.
exists.
There you go.
That's
There you go.
it.
All right, the last one, and I think you will at least get 1 for 3. So 33% is pretty good here on this one.
Hey, I told you my whole career right now is 1 for 3. I send 3 pitches, I get
There you
one
go.
right.
Yeah.
Here's the fastball down the middle. Let's
Yeah.
go. What
All
do you
right.
got?
You are the czar of Penn State sports, for one day and one day only. What are you changing?
Oh, okay. Oh my gosh. Wow, that's a great question. Well, I'm a wrestling guy, so I'm doubling the budget for wrestling. Kale Sanderson. Well, okay, so I'm the czar for one day, and what I'm doing during that one day is I'm making Kale Sanderson the czar of all sports. He's taking my position the next day. Oh my God, I don't know. I really think that I'm such a fan of my Penn State experience because of there's just very few schools like Penn State. There's just like almost no one else in the conversation because when you work at the Collegian, you're gonna like if you work there for a year and you're okay, you're gonna get a chance to cover like a team that's in the Final Four of some sport, you know? And that was very cool. Right away, I was covering big time sports. One thing I would do is I would be more open with journalists for sure. I think it's hard. I've made some requests over the years that I'm just like, seriously, guys, you don't want to let that football player have lunch with this writer? I mean, come on. It's just very bottled up. I would loosen the reins a little bit on that. I got to tell some amazing stories about Penn State fencers and Penn State women's and men's soccer players and wrestlers. I mean, I write about wrestlers. I'd write about a wrestler every day if I could. And I think that pipe has gotten smaller and smaller over the years. So I would encourage man, I don't want the SIDs to all hate me, but like I do think there's a pathway to being a little bit more open, especially around football players. Like, why, you know, are they letting people go have lunch with a football player? I don't know that that happens too much. So I would kind of do that. I think I would do that, and I also think that we are entering an era where the athlete has more power than they have before. So I do think there's like a maybe a future where this isn't really answering your question. There's a future though where like the athlete has a spokesperson for herself or himself, and so you don't need to like just go to the Tuesday press conference phone call or whatever. So I don't know. I would definitely lean into that too. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like so hard of a question, man. Good one.
We talk about that. I mean, that is that what you said is a core piece of our podcast in the way we because we tend to look at it through either the sports business or the sports media lens. And yeah, no, that's, I mean, you're preaching to the choir here. That's, I think the fan is so much better served, particularly at Penn State, when players are available, people are available. Because then you get to have those stories, you know, more often than not. And 99% of the time, they're a positive. Like they're not gonna. Nobody's gonna write that story to make anybody look bad, I think would be the best way to say that. So.
I just had an experience on that Nebraska wrestler story where I went through the sports information office and they were like, yeah, coach's office is over here and just go ahead in. And I was just like, I was in the office alone for 5 minutes. And you realize like, wow, that's like a ridiculous thing that I've grown accustomed to like not having any chance of, you know? And Nebraska was like, yeah, do whatever you want. Here's the guy's cell phone, call the athlete. There's a lot of times where you're like, can I talk to your special teams coach? And they're like, yeah, but I have to run it through like a Zoom that you don't know what it's like all this protective BS. Like you can't have the person's cell phone and everything. And I'm not sure what is happening out there that I'm missing where that's like all these investigative hit pieces that are ruining college football players' lives, but that's that's kind of how they treat it. And so that Nebraska experience was awesome and also very jarring because I was like, every school should do this. Like, come to practice. You know, I don't know what Penn State's practice process is now, but I think they're a little bit more open. But like, guess what? They threw the ball a lot at practice today because the other team has a bad pass defense this week. Don't write that. We can't have them. Like, that stuff is so silly. And I guess it speaks to the power of sports now that it's just like such a, it's such a, there's so few things. We're so diversified in what we watch and how we do it and what we do for entertainment and everything. Sports is like the closest thing we have to monoculture that it's like, of course, it's like a big industrial complex. So I don't know. But that's what I'd do for my day. It would be maybe just every coach's office is open for the day, every practice is open. They should, like, that's a, isn't that a fun idea? Isn't that a fun idea? It's open house day at Penn State Sports.
I think it's
Come
great.
on
Hey,
in.
take your daughter to work day. I think that's probably the best idea we've ever heard. It's open house day for Penn State sports.
Open house at sports day. And then everybody only has to do it for one day, right? I'm trying to think of Joe Paterno dealing with open house day. He would not have responded well to that, I can tell you that. But yeah, open house day. That's what I'm doing. And Kale Sanderson takes over the next day.
That's fair. That's
I
fair.
have a bonus question based on that. If they wrestle, if they conduct a wrestling match in Beaver Stadium, will you be there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I care about the opponent. Penn State throws on some opponents that you just know it's going to be a 44 zip afternoon. I hope. I mean, if they're wrestling Oklahoma State or something, which is like the biggest news story in my world right now, is that David Taylor left State College to go to Oklahoma State, and I think they're going to be good. And if they're wrestling Oklahoma State in Beaver Stadium, I will be there and my kids will be there whether they like it or not. We're going.
Wait, that's how exactly how we feel about it too.
And I'm sleeping on either Steve Samsel's couch or Mike Porman's. Probably Mike Porman's, but like I'm there.
We got room for the family in the studio here, so you'd be
Okay.
good.
Yeah. Steve's got a good setup. You gotta watch out for Porman,
Give
get
me
rid of him
the
soon.
gist. What are the chances of the match at Beaver Stadium happening? I think it was Carter Starace tweeted it,
That's
right?
it. That's I mean, and
Okay.
there's a desire to put more events. That's the main thing. There's a desire to put more events in Beaver Stadium because it just sits there besides 7 weekends a year to make money on it. And I mean, I think it's a no-brainer. Steve and I chatted through the logistics of it last week. It's tough because of where State College is and the time of year that to get, because I agree with you. You can't have the little sisters of the poor walking in there. You need to have Oklahoma State, Iowa, Ohio State. I could even argue Rutgers to come in, but it's got to be the right opponent.
Oh man, you get me excited, man. Hey, you could also have a big high school match there that day. The high schools would be super
Could,
excited about it. You'd bring in another 1,000 fans from that. Okay, I'm gonna put myself on that planning committee on
there
the
you go.
day of
There you
my one
go.
day.
See if it's on your radar. That's a good thing. So I it feels like Starace, when he popped off about it last 2 weeks ago, right? It was the year before was Penn State playing West Virginia at night at home, and there was a countdown clock in the locker room that got out on social media, and that's what led it. It feels like there's some there to this, but that would take a lot of work on everybody's part and a lot of flexibility on the opponent because you'd have to start earlier. Their first home match last year was in December, right? So you're talking a month earlier, but it'd be great for the sport. So we'll see.
All right, Ryan. Well, it's your
I would
chance.
also wrestle in the match if anybody. I'm just throwing.
Perfect. We'll sign you up as
So
well.
there's a celebrity. See, so we have an undercard.
Yeah.
We have a
Yeah.
celebrity match, a high school match, and like the main event. So like realistically, there you go, Penn State. Flesh that out.
Hey, I'll tell you what. There's two other guys that have covered Penn State wrestling forever and are friends of mine. I will wrestle one of them, Jim Carlson or Andy Elder. It's
Okay.
on. I don't
You
know
guys
what
might
our
have to pay the fans to watch that stuff.
Did he
Our
just
yeah, our weight classes. I've moved up a few classes in my day, so it might be a little heavier.
Did you
Yeah,
just
you're
cut a
right.
promo on our podcast? I think
Yeah,
that's what you
hey
did.
Elder, hey Elder, I know where you live. I want to see you on Beaver Stadium Field on November 20th. It's on.
That's great. This is great. All right, Ryan. Now it's your actual chance to plug all of your other things that aren't wrestling at Beaver Stadium, work related.
Go to ESPN.com. It's some of the best writing in the world from all of my friends and colleagues at ESPN. I love the company very, very much. They've been great to me. And then I just plug the idea of sobriety. I like to talk about that. It's been one of the most important things that's ever happened to me. There's way more help out there than people realize, you know, and I think is May Mental Health Awareness Month? I think it is, right?
I believe
I don't
that's right.
know. But yeah, so this is a good time. This is a good time to declare it January 1st, you know. This is my New Year's resolution. I'm going to go get help. And I didn't think I could ever do it, and I did. You know, I'm doing it every day. I'm trying every day. So I try to get that out there too. And yeah, I think that's it.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Steve, what a positive outlook on life. Like, what a just a positive, uplifting conversation. From Ryan. And that's my main takeaway this week. And I'm very excited. And I think it comes through also in his writing. I think that's the other big thing to see here. I think he's I enjoy his personality, and it comes through every time I read him.
Yeah, and I think the outlook shapes a lot of it. And he talked about the background for that and influences and how and why. But there's probably a handful-ish of people that, like, when they're in the room or I deal with them, I feel better that I got the chance to do that. And he's one of them, you know. So I was really glad he made time for us. And if you aren't familiar with his work, just Google ESPN Ryan Hockensmith and start reading through the stories. Some of the ones we talked about, to like the bowling ball guy in the basement, the bobblehead story, which we didn't
Bobblehead,
talk
yeah.
about, the porta potties at the Buffalo Bills Stadium, which is like he just finds a way to make everything interesting. And I think he sells himself a little bit short. I mean, I think he's right in that he reports everything, really, really reports. Dude can write.
No, that's the thing. Like he was being very humble there on that interview. I think the one of the interesting things that I am seeing or picking up on or just kind of coming out of that conversation, but just kind of some of the conversations we've had is there's still a place for long form writing on the internet, even without ESPN the magazine or Sports Illustrated's magazine version. And honestly, I think the internet's only made a lot of that better. And I think, like, you know, a magazine subscription, you only used to get, what, 12 magazines a year, or ESPN was weekly, so you could get one pretty much every week. There's only so many stories. The internet has allowed us to kind of get more stories. I know it's 2024. I know the internet has been a thing for 30 years now, but I just think that's something that the sports fan is better for. And it's stories like that we get from Ryan that are interesting to me.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you to Ryan for joining us. We won't be sending him creamery ice cream. Clearly, he's
That's okay.
okay. That's okay. All right. I think my least favorite podcast trope is when podcast hosts are like, we recorded and then some big no news broke and now we're going to discuss it. We recorded and some big news broke and now we're going to discuss it. Penn State wrestler, Olympic gold medalist, I don't know,
World
whatever,
champion.
world champion, whatever adjective you want to put in front of his name. David Taylor, he's off to Oklahoma to coach the Pokes. Gonna go coach Oklahoma State Wrestling, of course, which is the program that has won the most titles in wrestling. Kind of feels like a hit, just kind of to both the Penn State wrestling community, as I am certainly the poster child for speaking for it, but also kind of maybe. And you could provide a little bit more on this, but the Center County region as well.
Yeah, I mean it's big, right? It's and he had so many different connections, right? And you know, was part of the foundation for Cale's dynasty, business owner in Center County. So big move in lots of ways. I don't think the sky is falling in any way, shape, or form for Penn State. I think it's great for the sport. I think it's wonderful for the sport of wrestling. I hope it works out super for him. And it's been fun to watch people react to it, you know, afterward and see what has happened. And I do think where it affects Penn State and probably will for people who are probably tighter with it than me, there's going to be some kid who was a recruit somewhere along the line or who was lined up to go to Penn State, who at some point is going to say, oh, well, wait a second, they're really deep at that at a couple of those weights. I think I'll go here, train with the Olympian and world champion. And he's brought some people with him. And I'm sure Oklahoma State's facilities are good and the resources are good. They're going to be decent. I'd be surprised, I guess, if they weren't decent pretty quickly,
I think that
which
was
is great, great for the sport.
I think it's interesting, and we kind of explored this topic back in right after the national championship. Like, we have taken the Cale era for granted that when something like this it happens, maybe it does feel like the sky is falling. But that's also the beauty of how good of a coach he is. But also, like you said, I think it is great for the sport because a little bit of parity won't hurt anybody. And I think that's only going to make it stronger, make it grow. It's super fascinating the parallels between kind of really those two of Cale at Iowa State, and then comes to State College as a four-time champ and an Olympic medalist, school medalist, and then over to Penn State as a coach, and really, and it kind of feels a little similar with the David Taylor route. And like I said, it feels like there's also a community aspect to this that kind of, I guess, surprised a lot of people. And I think that's maybe why just hearing from you, having conversations with you and kind of some other people that are in the center region, that's kind of what I took away from it, or at least those are kind of my initial feelings on it.
I forget. Did I tell you? Well, I guess we didn't. Did I tell you I sent him a thank you note? Did I tell
Yes,
you
you
that?
did. You did. You
Okay.
did. Yeah.
Okay.
Good guy,
So
Steve.
yeah.
Steve is a good guy. He writes handwritten letters still.
I just think, daughter, dad, whatever else, pleasures. So I think it's really, it had to be not an easy decision, but at the same time, I'm sure it's a good gig, right? He's certainly going to be the news for wrestling in the off season and leading up to it. So I'm excited for them, and I'm excited for what it does for the sport.
The wild dominoes that fell too. Like it's Aaron Brooks comes to Penn State. Aaron Brooks trains under Cale Sanderson. Cale Sanderson makes both of them into like virtual Olympians, and then they go head to head. Who knows if David Taylor wins, it beats Aaron Brooks. Like Aaron Brooks is probably going to go on to do something else or train for the next Olympics, and David Taylor's going to the Paris Olympics and probably won't take this job because Oklahoma State needs a coach sooner rather than later.
Yep.
Two things, two quick things. I know we went a little long today, but I just want to bring up. Sounds like the Hopi Valley brewing event at the stadium was good and people had fun. I think the weather was
Positive
nice.
from what I've seen. Like the
Yeah.
weather was a little bit positive. I don't know if they got the numbers they want. Like I didn't see throngs of people in the pictures,
Yeah.
but I don't know if they wanted throngs of people, obviously. So, yeah.
I think a couple people I posted were like, "Oh my God, I can't," like you said, like, "I can't believe I'm drinking beer on this field. Like, never thought this would happen." So I think that's good. Penn State softball making the NCAA tournament for the first time in 13 years, essentially having their, one could argue, their best season ever. Good to see as somebody that cares marginally about the bat and ball sports at Penn State. Good to see those two programs
Yeah.
growing.
Friday afternoon at 4. It'll be fun to watch on
Yeah.
ESPNU. So it'll be neat to see it.
All right, dogs are all excited as well. This week's Old Guy Young Guy is brought to you by, I think, last weekend, Steve.
Went on a camping trip with some youth. So I'm curious, are you a camper?
So I think this is what's interesting. I think we have to establish a definition of what is a camper, because
It's true.
we would go to Racetown. My dad is part of people that own a house at Racetown. It's in the wilderness. There are campfire camping like activities. I don't know if I would necessarily call that camping, because when I think of camping, I think of either RV at the lake or tent set up in the wilderness. So I'm gonna say no, I think is what I'm gonna say.
That's fair. That's fair. Like, yeah, I did Boy Scout stuff, right? So we camped. I think we went camping once in college. It was an excuse to take the girls out in the woods, basically. I don't know that we are camp, like, we are, yeah, like,
The Samsel
no,
family
like
didn't pop into
cabin. Give
gear.
me a cab. You can give me a cabin as long as there's a cabin. That's cool. And then there's a fire pit somewhere. That's cool. I don't. I'm probably past where I need to be in a tent. Like, I mean, I'm sure I could do it. That's just not my, and probably not Mrs. Samsel's biggest Again, she'd do it well, but she'd be like, "Yeah, if our option is this,
Yeah, I think that's
we
about
have
right a
in-laws.
little bit.
We have in-laws and friends who, like, we go to the Outer Banks. They'll take their camper and spend like the first night there ahead of time. I'm like, at the beach, in like the pool behind camper. That sounds hot to me. That sounds hot and uncomfortable. So yeah. So yes, I don't know that I'm glamping exactly full on, but
Yeah, I th
it's probably glamping adjacent is my
yeah, I
camping
think that's a
preference.
good way to put it. I don't know. I don't think I could get. I just no desire. The air conditioning, like air conditioning, too much. Too many bugs.
Or cool nights. I've been trying to sell them on like Cook's Forest, like someplace cool at night, and they're like, "Yeah, no." So
The Samsung family didn't like load up the
then we are
truck
not.
with
No, we did not.
tents.
No, we hell, we struggle with bike rides sometimes and bowling. So camping
Really? Oh my God.
with two girls 11 months apart, sometimes we struggle with some things that, a weekend full of it wasn't the recipe for success.
Yeah, I don't like the whole like. I also don't like have not having a bathroom. Like I just
Yeah,
don't. I
I'm a
want a
big fan
bathroom.
of.
What? I want a bathroom. I think that's a basic requirement. All right. Well, that's this week's podcast. Thanks to Ryan for joining us. It was a fun conversation. Other than that, I don't know if I'll write this week. I don't. There's not really much to write about. We might get some kick times. It may not. Fox released three today, which were one we already knew, which was the Texas Michigan game, and then we've got the Ohio State and Michigan game, and then kind of the surprise one in my book, which was the Wisconsin Alabama game. NBC also released two, so and I don't think Paramount's doing a or Paramount CBS. I don't know who would do that up front. I don't think they're doing an upfront this year, so. We'll update the blog if there are, or at least the schedules on the blog. Don't know if I'll write, but just offering that. The blog's there, it exists. We'll probably build out some other stuff for the blog this week, though. That'll be live. Resources, I guess, would be the best way to put it. Let's see. The blog is called stuffsummersays.com. On that website, there's a section called
Steve.
with Steve. Then we've got emails. Mine's Darian at stuffsummersays.com. Steve's is.
Steve at stuffsummersays.com.
Did we forget anything else? Nope. All right. Twitter handles. Mine's at stuffsummersays. Steve's is.
At Steve Samsel.
See ya. Bye.